Hey everyone, so you're listening to Engaging Walk. My name is Drake, and this week we are going to be discussing the fifth principle of the Gottman series, which is solve your solvable problems. So this is actually it's like a 3-in-1 or a 4-in-1 of the chapters, because initially he breaks down the difference between solvable and unsolvable problems, and then he gets into the aspect of solve your solvable problems and then coping with your solvable problems, because for Gottman there's a difference between your solvable problems and your unsolvable problems, and focusing on the solvable problems will amount to a lot of satisfaction in the marriage. And then there's also a litany of unsolvable problems that, although are always going to be lingering in the relationship, they are not going to destroy the relationship. We just have to learn how to cope with them. So these can be like fundamental differences in our personalities. They could be like religious issues, cultural issues, and maybe even aspects of our personality like laziness or procrastination and cleanliness that is just always going to be there, and we have to learn how to cope with them. And then we also have the solvable problems, which, you know, tend to be pretty similar in nature, but they're more situational type of problems that are contingent on, like, let's say if a person's going to work or if we're busy, or distractions that occur in the relationship. And these are things that we can actually change with some effort. And those solvable problems are going to be things that, you know, through conflict resolution and through mutual respect and understanding, and through going through the conflict in a respectful way, we can actually come to solutions on these problems and become closer and have more peace in the relationships that we, you know, that we're engaging in. So, especially in marriage. So this is, again, this is the Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work by John Gottman. And so we're not sponsored or affiliated with the Gottman Institute. Where I'm just doing a review and an analysis from what I've read and incorporating it into like what we see and like what we do here with Engaging Walk, which is, again, we focus more on marriage, but also in couples that are going into marriage, not just for marriage. So like, what can we learn from these strategies? What can we learn from these tactics? And like, what can we learn from this perspective from John Gottman? There was a little bit of the things I disagreed with, but we're going to get into that. And we're also going to get into some of the aspects of like what did he talk about. And so we'll give a little bit of a brief overview. And to me, I don't think, one of my criticisms is he doesn't really give like a very clear definition of like what a solvable and unsolvable problem are. They tend to actually be pretty blurry in my view. And although I kind of get like what he's talking about in the general sense, there's a purpose to that, because like it's not very clear all the time what's going to be solvable and what's not going to be solvable. What aspects are part of our character, of our character, and what aspects of what we, of our behaviors aren't. So he doesn't really give a clear definition, you know. So maybe that's either too difficult of a task, or it's so highly contingent on different situations and who people are as individuals. But I understand the gist of what he's talking about. I wish it was a little bit more clear, so maybe I can break it down a little bit further and give my opinion as to what he was talking about in terms of like how to spot the difference, or like what differentiates a solvable problem versus an unsolvable problem. And, you know, when Ruby and I did the marriage counseling, there was one person's category of an unsolvable problem was, for me, a very solvable problem. And I think a lot of that has to do with like how oriented you are towards not having conflict, or how malleable your personality can be and how less rigid or open you are as a person. So that is probably one of the major reasons why Gottman doesn't get into like clear definitions of like what distinguishes a solvable problem from an unsolvable problem. But there is, I sort of understand that there is like a general, perhaps like common consensus of like what aspects of ourselves we can change and what aspects of ourselves that we can't, because that's ultimately what he's talking about here, is that there are aspects of our of our character that can, or, you know, culture and things like that, that can come into conflict with our spouse. And when we're having that conflict with our spouse, is it something that we can change as a person? Is it not? Or is it not? And I think this also has a lot to do with the previous chapter, which is let your partner influence you. Later on in the chapter, he gets into a lot of data and a lot of situations in which he has seen in couples that the ability for the, particularly a lot of this falls on the husband, is for the husband to take on a lot of the characteristics or the influence that the wife brings into the marriage, and the husband's ability to incorporate those influences from his wife and to share power with her and to give her sort of like room to breathe in the relationship and to take on those characteristics of like what she brings into the relationship and let that flourish is a lot of the times going to mitigate or manage the conflict resolution that's going to happen between the differences of the husband and the wife, for example. And a lot of the examples that he gives shows that like how much of this is actually almost hardwired into the differences between men and women. He gives them a good example or data that backs up how children play, and that females have a more long-term head start in terms of like emotional development than men do, and or boys rather, and that there's a, once those differences become pronounced, even as early, like very early childhood, that boys tend to play with other boys and only really interact with other boys in terms of like problem solving and teamwork if it's game related, if it's related to a thing, building something, problem solving in terms of like real world applications, whereas women and rather young girls get this practice of dealing with emotions and feelings at a much earlier age. And I think that's actually like really important to take into consideration as we get into this idea of like problem solving and what is a solvable problem and what is not a was a unsolvable problem, as he put it. So later on in the previous principle, he gives a lot of indications that like, okay, so as the man takes on his, you know, his wife's problems that she brings, because 85% of the problems that are brought into the relationship are voiced by the wife. And, you know, for a lot of like psychological research, this shows that this is very valid because women are more perceptive towards problems than men are. And so, you know, this all makes sense. And of course, this also backs up a lot of the research that shows, particularly in the European countries and pretty much also around the world, that innately, you know, biologically, men are more inclined to be interested in things, i.e. problems, and, you know, like problem solving, sports, electronics, tools, what have you, things like that, than women, who tend to be more interested in people. So all of this kind of like gives a good background into like what we're dealing with when we're dealing with problem solving, distinguishing the problems that are solvable and the ones that are not solvable. And to me, I thought that, you know, a lot of this is also going to depend on the nature of the person. But more than that, I think it also is going to deal with like how much of you're willing to compromise. How much are you willing to let the peace that is established between you and your spouse go to waste in order for like either your ego or for, you know, some sort of principle. It doesn't always have to be ego. It could be a principle, or it could be many different things. So this is a really broad range of things that we're talking about. And, you know, to his credit, it is really difficult to distinguish what is a solvable problem and an unsolvable problem. So I think one pitfall of this chapter is just kind of like putting things into hard categories of like a solvable problem versus an unsolvable, because, you know, how you deal with those issues can be really different depending on if it's something that you can actually endure or if it's something that can be, you know, changed. So this also has to be balanced with like how much are we willing to change as individuals in our relationships. So all of this is like actually really complicated, and it's not such a, you know, a distinguishing thing. So, you know, I understand that he didn't, I understand now like why he didn't make such a clear, demarcation between what's a solvable and unsolvable problem. But I think that if he had done as much research, which he did do, then he would have, maybe more insight into that. But I think what it could, if we're going to boil it down into something, it could be like that the solvable problem is something that you as an individual are willing to forego or change for the sake of the relationship, and the unsolvable problem is something that you're not. And that's going to be highly subjective, but it is what it is. So he gives some examples of, you know, religion. But for some people, they could change their religion. So again, and then also like principles and values. So I think those are things that you're actually going to have to do a lot of determination in the leading up to marriage. But if you're already married, then, you know, those differences are baked into the cake, as they say. Whereas, you know, as not to say that you need to be hyper picky, but if those are the things that your prospective husband or wife is not going to be able to change, then you should really do a lot of that determination before getting into the marriage. That like, hey, I'm Jewish and my wife is Christian. The likelihood of me changing her position to becoming Jewish is very low. So therefore, I should probably look for somebody that is Jewish, as long as that is a, you know, an aspect of like something that I really want our children and our family to, to pursue. For example, another thing could be sets of values for, this actually comes up a lot with like, especially now, people being able to determine, hey, what are we going to do if one of our children is gay? Or what are we going to do if one of our children is asking for transgender, surgery and things like that? And some people finding out in the dating stage, like, yeah, you know what? If that's what pops up, then I'm not in favor of that. And then the other one says that they are. So that is, you know, that's a very stark contrast and difference of values and of personality. So those are things that you're going to want to discover before you go into it, but you know, those things can be really difficult to navigate, those unsolvable differences that that are already baked into the cake of the relationship. So definitely want to suss those things out and determine like, you know, how your partner sits in terms of like their values, their religion, the things that they can't change about themselves. Or if they did, you know, it would take a really long time with a lot of persuasion. And is that going to be fruitful for the relationship and for the marriage? Now, Gottman gets into the other category of problems, which are the solvable ones, you know, and those seem like pretty straightforward, but they can also have mirrors and characteristics of the unsolvable ones, especially if we start bringing in things like our values into those behaviors. Because for a lot of people, they can give a lot of instances or reflection of our intentions and our values and, you know, higher order problems as opposed to just behaviors. And that can lead to a lot of heartache, that can lead to a lot of arguing and issues in the marriage. So he gives a really good breakdown of how to avoid those communication breakdowns in 5 steps that he has towards solving the solvable problems, which is 1, soften your startup; 2, learn to make and receive repair attempts; 3, soothe yourself and each other; 4, compromise; and 5, process any grievances so that they don't linger. And all of these, I think, are actually really important. And, you know, just to give you an idea of like what some people might categorize as a unsolvable problem, but which is probably pretty solvable. I remember when we were back at our training for this, when we did like, it wasn't really training, it was a marriage retreat. And the counselor there, it wasn't just anybody, it was the counselor, said like, hey, you know, me and my wife have an unsolvable problem where, you know, I like the toilet paper to, you know, to come down the side that faces the wall, and she likes it to come down the side that's, you know, facing, you know, the user. And he's like, so if I put the toilet, we just came to the agreement that if I put the toilet paper in, it's going on the side of the wall, and if she puts it in, it's going on the other side, and that's just how we deal with that. You know, I think that's like, it's pretty silly, but, you know, it just goes to show that there are some things that we do, some habits, characteristics about us, values that some people will just be like, whatever, I don't really care. I'll just flip it around the other way. I didn't even notice that I was doing it that way. And for another person, it's, you know, it's an unsolvable problem. They're like, no, no matter what you say, I'm always going to do it this way. So I think we have to take into consideration that our spouse might have a background or might have an affection for things that they do that are tied to deeper things. Like, you know, for example, with the toilet paper thing, like maybe that's the way that he and his family always did it. And he just feels very strongly for some odd reason that he's going to put it that way. And no matter what his wife says. Now, if it's for me, I wouldn't really care if my wife wanted it one way or the other. But yeah, that's fine. I didn't know that you felt so strongly about it. But if you did, I'm going to accommodate you because I don't feel that strongly about it. And even if I did, I don't feel that, I would never feel that strongly about toilet paper one way or the other to like have an argument or a permanent disagreement about it. But, you know, it just goes to show that everyone is different in these aspects. So we have to approach each of these problems that we're going to solve or try to just maintain a sort of like peace and truce around them with a degree of respect. So let's go into the first one. He says, soften your startup. So a lot of the marriage counseling that Gottman talks about is, you know, there's so much like mudslinging that occurs when the couple are having a fight. Where instead of just levying the complaint or the disagreement, that there is a criticism behind it. So again, we're bringing up this concept from, you know, a previous principle, which is, you know, the complaint is fine, but the criticism has like some type of personal animus towards it that we're trying to avoid. So that this could sound something like, hey, you know, you always leave the toilet seat up. It's really disrespectful of you, and you know, you just don't care about me. So that whole package has been brought together, right? You left the toilet seat up, you don't care about me, and you're only thinking about yourself. So there's three things all bundled into one when they're actually just completely separate things. And the more we pile onto it, the more difficult it is going to be to unpack it and resolve the different issues, because the way that the problem was presented was all in one, right? You leave the toilet seat up because you don't care about me and you're only thinking about yourself. So again, really difficult to try to mitigate or solve that problem. So let's do what Gottman says here and soften the startup, which is, hey, you know, I noticed that you've been leaving the toilet seat up more often. Is there a reason for that? Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't even realize I was doing it. I'll make sure to, you know, put the toilet seat back down when I'm done using it. You know, so very two completely different approaches to the same problem. The problem isn't necessarily that the person is, you know, doesn't care about you and is only thinking about themselves. It's an assumption that we're bringing into that argument. You know, likewise for on the other end, it could be like, you know, you're always late. When we're getting ready to go out, you know, the husband says to the wife, you know, you just don't care about our arrangements. You don't care about our time. Where, you know, it might be difficult. Like, everyone has difficulty, I think, getting out of the house. It's not such an easy thing to do for a lot of people. So a little bit of grace and a little bit of like acceptance. And, you know, of course, we want to be, you know, on time and punctual for our arrangements and, you know, but that could also be on like the household in general. Like, we need to get up earlier. We need to make sure our chores are done, make sure that X, Y, and Z is done so that we can leave the house in a timely manner when we're going to different, you know, activities or different events and things like that. So softening the approach, you know, so again, instead of saying like, hey, where are, you know, you're always late getting out of the house. You don't care about our arrangements. You don't care about our time. You could just say like, hey, you know what? I noticed that you've been having a hard time getting out of the house. You know, what's going on with that? Like we've been late for the last few events. And your wife might say something like, yeah, you know, I've been having a hard time with it. If you wouldn't mind helping me with the dishes or whatever so that we can get out earlier, that would really be a big help. Or, you know, if you can get the dog ready or the baby ready before, you know, so that would really help me out. So we're compromising, we're working together. And that's the number four step. But the second one is to learn to make and receive repair attempts. So even when we're having these like conflicts and the other, you know, let's say we even levy like an inappropriate packaged response to our partner, and you know, we throw in the criticism, included with the complaint. We say something to the effect of, "Hey, you know what? You never clean your car. Your car is always dirty. It just shows that you don't care about your things like I do. I care about my things. Why don't you show that you care about your things?" And Gottman gives this example in, I think, the previous chapter when he talks about letting your partner influence you. And it's a good one because, again, we're talking about this concept of behavior being attached to values and being attached to characteristics, when sometimes the behavior is not attached to that. It could be, but it's most likely not. You know, in most cases, people just act the way that they act without, you know, and we associate malice or we associate intention behind it, but we have to try to like not do that because it can be really harmful to the conversation and it can assume a lot of negative things about our partner that just aren't true. So the husband asks that or brings that to his wife and she says, hey, you know what? I'm sorry about that. Would you mind helping me next time with cleaning my car? And that right there is a repair attempt. Your partner in that sense is making they're reaching out and they're saying, yeah, you know what, there's a problem, let's try to repair it together, or let's try to address it together. And the worst thing you could do at that point is to reject it and not work with that. So any kind of like extension of an apology or reconciliation or repair, you know, that person made a big step in doing that. And if you just kind of like shut that down or use it as further ammunition to continue the fight, then not only have you moved into the wrong, but you may have made it more difficult for your partner to reach out in the future. So that's something I think that you definitely want to be aware of. And then the third step, he says, is to soothe yourself and each other. So this, I think, can come into different forms when he's talking about soothe yourself and each other. That in the midst of a heated argument, that it, especially this goes back to like love languages, where if like you feel like, you know, this would be the best time to reach out and like just touch my partner, you know, give my wife like a touch on the leg, you know, a touch on the shoulder, hold hands, just to let her know that I care about her and I care about us getting through this, through the conflict. That could go a long way. Or, you know, embracing each other during the argument, or giving just like some kind of indication that, hey, I love you, or, you know, we're having an argument, but that doesn't change the fact that I love you. And establishing that and, you know, that connection can really help with the process of coming to a conclusion and coming to a solvable area, a solvable problem. And then the fourth is compromise. So, you know, this is obviously the most important but the most difficult step in the whole process, is coming to a compromise. Because, you know, at this point, if you both feel connected, if you both feel like, okay, well, this is a rational problem that we can come to a rational solution, you know, you have to work through a compromise to come to an area in which you can just kind of just move on from the problem. And I think a lot of the times you're just going to have to be honest with about how you both feel about the situation. And once you come to an area in which you can both feel satisfied about the outcome, then you sort of have to deal with what the next step is, which is process any grievances so that they don't linger. So once you come to a compromise, you kind of just have to forgive and forget and move on and don't continuously bring up the issue that's no longer an issue and be satisfied and happy with the fact that you came to a compromise. I would say that one of my personal opinions or recommendations for coming to a compromise is give it some time. And if you're honest and open about like what your actual problem is with the situation, and you are responsible in the way that you voice your concern, that if you really listen to your partner and their point of view on it, then the area in which you can come to a compromise should be pretty accessible. It should be pretty apparent. For example, like let's say you're having issues with finance, and you know your spouse brings to you, and comes up to you and they say, hey, you know what? I think that you know we need to spend less money on eating out, and the husband is like, yeah, well, you know what? I really like eating out. I think that the main problem is that you've been spending too much on makeup. And, you know, or name the product or whatever. And you both come to an area of, well, if you think that I'm spending too much on makeup and I think that you're spending too much on takeout, then let's actually look at it. And reviewing your budget and reviewing like how much you're actually spending can really be helpful at that point. You can really look at, okay, well, how much money is going towards where? And if you look at your finances and say, okay, well, I'm spending $100 a month on takeout and you're spending $100 on makeup throughout the month. Is that a number that we're both happy with? And okay, yeah. Yeah, we're both spending $100. That's fine. Well, then the issue has been resolved. You took a look at the finances and you took a look at the budget and you came to a determination that you're both satisfied with, and you really shouldn't be bringing it up anymore. But if it was one way or the other, then you should come to an agreement somewhere in the middle. For example, I'm spending $200 on takeout. You're spending $50 on makeup. You were right. I was wrong. I'm spending more money. I'm sorry about that. What if I cut back to $100 and then that leaves you room for $100, and so therefore we're both spending $200, which, you know, we'll actually be saving money. We're saving $50 a month based off of this because I'm spending a lot less money and you get more money for your makeup. Yeah, that works, you know, or some other type of solution that presents itself from looking at the problem rationally and being able to make a determination from there. And it's like processing any grievances so that they don't linger. That's going to be really important. I think once you've come up with a solution that works for both of you and allows you to come to an agreement, and the last thing you should ever do is bring it up again. And honestly, you should look at those situations of successful conflict resolution as a point of pride in your relationship, actually. It shouldn't be a point of like, you know, remember that 6 months ago when we used to argue about this? You were a real jerk for that. The conversation should be more like, hey, you remember 6 months ago when we used to argue about this and we don't anymore? I'm really happy about that. I'm really proud about that aspect of our relationship, that we don't argue about that anymore, that we were able to come to a solution and that we're able to work together so well. Yeah, I think that's really the only thing that you should be able to say about past grievances. But, you know, that would come with some maturity and with some ability to look at the at that situation and, you know, and really be proud of it and to come up with a solution and a compromise that is actually favorable and actually, you know, works for both of you. Okay, so with that, we're probably just going to start wrapping it up. And, of course, we've got the next principal for Gottman. And so he's got 7 principles, and number 6, well, I've almost got it, is, this one's a long one, is going to be overcoming gridlock. So there was a lot that went into solving your typical solvable problems. And again, a lot of them are going to be intermixed with unsolvable problems for a lot of people, in my opinion. And, you know, so he gives a lot of different common experiences or common problems, just to sort of give go back a little bit and talk about some of them, which is, you know, housework, unplugging from distractions, difficulties with romanticism and sex in the relationship. So coming to those are actually going to be really difficult problems, especially, I'm not sure exactly when you wrote this book, but those electronic and social media distractions, you know, definitely are probably going to become more increasingly difficult of a problem for many couples to deal with. So, like, that sort of, like, being able to compromise on a very, that is a solvable problem. But, you know, some people might incorporate that as an unsolvable problem. Again, those lines can be pretty blurry. But, you know, sex, electronic distractions, romanticism, you know, having romantic aspects, dating, having romantic date nights, responsibilities for housework, finance, childcare, all of those are solvable problems that require a good deal of communication, respect, and going through those 5 steps that Gottman discussed in order to come to a compromise. So, you know, softening your approach, you know, coming to a compromise, don't let those lingering problems linger. Those are all going to be really crucial for us to be able to come to solvable problems and you know, work together. So, and then again, let's just review them really quick. So we got the soften your startup. Number 2 was learn to make and receive repair attempts. So when our partner does reach out, let's not shoot them down. 3, soothe yourself and each other. Make sure you use each other's love language to soothe each other and breathe affection into the relationship, to turn towards each other, as Gottman likes to say. And then, you know, come to the compromise, and then don't, you know, and process any grievances so that they don't linger. And then, of course, we're going to be going into next week. It's going to be the principle number 6, which is overcome gridlock. I'm really looking forward to going over that with you guys. So hopefully you learned something today from the 5th principle of Gottman. I know I did. I know I've been learning a lot from reading the book and going over it with you guys and discussing it with my wife. So on Monday, you can expect a new episode from us over here at Engaging Walk. And that's it for we got for you guys today. And hope you guys enjoy the rest of your weekend. Normally we would have had this out yesterday as a Friday special, but we, you know, things have been pretty busy around the household. But I'm glad to be able to get that done for you guys today and posting it today. So happy Saturday! Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I'll see you guys on Monday. Goodbye.